CBS News Face the Nation in 60 seconds.
To run a successful business, you need to make the most of your time and money. Good news, LegalZoom can help you save both during National Small Business Month. LegalZoom is the smart way to start your business. Right now, when you incorporate or form an LLC, you can also save money on some of the basics to get up and running, like a 3-month trial of QuickBooks online accounting software and a domain name for a year through web.com, both at no charge. After your business is set up, LegalZoom can help with a lot more. Reviewing contracts and dealing with day-to-day legal hurdles takes time away from your growing business. That's what LegalZoom's business legal plan is for. You get legal advice for your business from independent attorneys licensed in 48 states. You also get access to NDAs, lease agreements, and more. Best part is you won't get charged by the hour since LegalZoom is not a law firm. Instead, you pay a low monthly fee. Save time and money starting and running your business during National Small Business Month at LegalZoom.com today. Don't forget to enter Gordon in the referral box at checkout. LegalZoom.com.
Today on Face the Nation, campaign 2016 rumbles on. And as the frontrunners pick up more wins and delegates, can anything or anyone stop them?
Donald Trump, go away!
Those who want to stop Donald Trump from winning the Republican nomination are running out of options. It's down to a 3-man race, but is there a realistic chance of winning for either John Kasich or Ted Cruz?
You have the establishment. They don't know what they're doing. They have no clue. They don't know how to win.
We'll talk to the only candidate who beat Donald Trump last week, Ohio Governor John Kasich, and talk to a brand new Ted Cruz supporter, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. We'll ask Bernie Sanders if his revolution has slowed now that Hillary Clinton's campaign is back on track. Plus, we'll have some insights from Florida voters disappointed in the prospect of a matchup between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
This is supposed to be the greatest country on earth, and right now we're being forced to pick the lesser of two evils.
It's all ahead on Face the Nation. Good morning and welcome to Face the Nation. I'm John Dickerson. There was more violence and protest this weekend on the campaign trail. Outside Phoenix, Arizona, protesters blockaded the road leading to a Trump rally for several hours. Three were arrested. Later, in Tucson, a man who was with a woman wearing a KKK hood was punched in the face by a Trump supporter. And about 1,000 anti-Trump protesters in New York City marched from Central Park to Trump Tower. All of this activity is picked up as Donald Trump seems headed towards his party's nomination. Trying to stop that in a more peaceful way is Governor John Kasich of Ohio. We spoke with him earlier. Governor, in order for you to get the nomination, you would have to win more than 100% of the remaining delegates. So how are you going to do it?
Well, first of all, nobody's going to have the delegates they need going to the convention. Everyone will fall short. And the convention, by the way, is an extension of the political process. So what will happen is people will go there with a certain number of delegates. We will go into Cleveland with momentum. And then the delegates are going to consider two things. Number one, who can win in the fall? And I'm the only one that can. That's what the polls indicate. And number two, John, a really crazy consideration, like who could actually be president of the United States? And I think when they take a look at my record, both in Washington and in Ohio, with the job growth, the wage growth, reforming the Pentagon, and they can understand that I have the crossover appeal, I think I will be picked. So I don't think anybody's going to get there with the delegates that they need to win.
Why shouldn't the person who goes into the convention, if they don't have the majority of delegates, but if they're well ahead, why shouldn't they get the nomination?
You know what? It's like one of my daughters said, well, I had an 86 and my other friends had less than that, so I should get an A. So we got rules. Sweetie, you got to make a 90 to get an A. In other words, we've got rules as to how many delegates you ought to get. And if you go in way ahead, you're likely to be picked. But what's interesting is in the 10 contested Republican conventions, you know that the leader going in only got picked 3 times? And again, John, I have to tell you that who's going to win in the fall? Who's going to beat Hillary? These other folks can't win. They can't win Ohio. I can tell you that. But in addition, look at the resume. Look at the record. Who actually can fix this country? Who can get us moving again, both domestically and with foreign policy? So that should be a consideration now. It's not much of one, to be honest with you. But when we get to a convention, See, because I was there when Ronald Reagan actually challenged Gerald Ford. Can you imagine how many people were mad at Reagan? But his message mattered. He came close. He ultimately became one of the greatest presidents we've ever had. So, you know, the convention is a very interesting thing, and delegates take things extremely seriously.
Has anyone...
But let me also tell you, John, if somebody can get the numbers, they would win. They're not going to get the numbers.
Has
so
anybody...
let's just everybody chill out.
Some people have suggested you should drop out so somebody can get the numbers because Ted Cruz is closer to that number than you are.
He needs 80% of the votes in order of the vote to get it. That's not going to happen, John. You know it, and I know it.
Has anyone asked
Trump
you to drop out, though?
Nobody is calling me directly and asking me to drop out. And by the way, why don't they drop out? Wait a minute, John. Why don't they drop out? I'm the one that can win in the fall. You know, another interesting thing. This party has run around for 7 years saying, how is it that we elected a one-term United States senator to be president who's never had the experience? Whatever happened to that? Remember that? So here's what I would say. I can win in the fall. They cannot.
You say you're delivering a positive message. You've stayed away from some of the back and forth. Would you not, in the pursuit of your nomination, not want the help of the Stop Trump forces, the organized efforts to stop Donald Trump?
You know, John, I am not in this for some political science game or some calculation. Let me just tell you that people are nervous about their work, their wages, their kids' future. That's what I focus on, responding to that legitimate concern that they have. And I tell them exactly how, in Washington, we had great success and balanced the budget and grew jobs. And I tell them about the 417,000 people who are now working in Ohio who didn't have a job when I became governor. I have people that come to my rallies and thank me for the fact that I have focused on the issue of mental illness and drug addiction. I don't have time to sit around thinking about this anti-Trump group or that group. Let me just do my job, okay? Let me just continue to communicate to the public, and we'll see where it all ends up. But I think this is a very, very constructive message to the American people, because I want you, the American people, you in your living rooms, to believe that you can change the world, and we need you to do it, because you'll revive the spirit of our country.
But, Governor, the people who are trying to stop Donald Trump believe that many of the things you've just described are imperiled by his candidacy. And that gets them a little exercised in the same way you're exercised. So I'm just wondering whether you think that they're wrong, they're crazy, they've missed something.
No, let them go and do. Look, you know what's interesting? Some of those very same people wanted me to get out of the race, and they wanted to get behind Rubio. What happened? Rubio's out, I'm in, okay? If I don't win Ohio, guess what? Trump's the nominee. I want to win Ohio. Now they want me to get out? What do you... Listen, these are the same establishment people that have been fighting me my entire political career. And you know what? I'll tell you what's in my mind's eye. The people I grew up with in McKees Rocks, the people that walked door to door for me. We had people from 22 states manning phone banks in Ohio. They came from all over the country to help because they're hopeful that together we can raise this country. I don't have time to think about all this political calculation in some back room somewhere. Okay, but, John? I'm just not doing it. You've known me long enough to know that what you see with me is what you get. Period. End of story.
But you have, in fact, brought on people to help you with the calculation, people with experience in previous contested. So you are, in fact, thinking about the calculation. You just don't want to talk
John,
about it.
Well, John, look. Wait a minute. First of all, the convention is an extension of this process. Of course I want Stu Spencer. Of course I want Charlie Black. Of course I want Vin Weber. Of course I want Tom Ridge. I mean, these are, of course I want the former governor of Utah. I want them all to help me. I know. What do we think? The convention is some sort of subterfuge? It's nothing more than an extension of what we're doing now. And if nobody gets the delegates, which they won't, then we'll have to work. You know, we'll have to work at the convention. And I will spend my time convincing them about my electability and my record. And if they buy it, great. If they don't, I will have done my best. John, I'm perfectly comfortable with this.
Let me ask you a presidential question about Merrick Garland put forward by the president for the Supreme Court. This could be a decision you have to handle. What's your sense? What's your feeling about the way that your Republican colleagues have responded to that nomination from the president?
Well, look, I never thought the president should send it because I knew nothing was going to happen. I mean, frankly, they probably ought to all sit down and meet with the guy. And my feeling is at the end of the day, whoever gets elected president should be in a position to be able to pick, you know, who they want, and the American people will decide by either voting for Republican or Democrat what the makeup of the court is. I just think that's a process that can unite us rather than a process that right now continues to divide us.
As someone who's talked about unity, would you take a look at Mr. Garland when you if you were elected president?
Well, you know, he received overwhelming support, I think, even from Senator Hatch. So of course we'd think about it. The way we do it, John, is we look at a person's record. I want a conservative who's not going to make the law, but who will interpret the law, and somebody of high standing. I don't care about their peccadilloes, 30 years ago. But we have a process. I've appointed over 100 judges in Ohio, including a woman that, fortunately, I was able to point to the Ohio Supreme Court, and we've had good success with our selections.
All right. Governor John Kasich of Ohio, thanks
so much
for being with us. After we taped that interview yesterday, Governor Kasich said that he would not appoint Judge Garland to the Supreme Court and that his comments were an effort to be polite. Joining us now from the campaign trail is Senator Bernie Sanders, who is in Tucson, Arizona. Senator, we've looked at the math here for the contest going forward, and it looks like you'd have to win almost 60% of the remaining delegates. So what's your path to the nomination? That's a big number.
Well, it is, but I think that the states that are coming up just on Tuesday, we got Idaho, we got Utah, we got Arizona, we're heading out west to Washington, we got Alaska, we have Hawaii, we're then heading to New York. We think that the path forward is a pretty good path for us. Clearly, Secretary Clinton did very, very well in the Deep South, not a strong area for us. But I think as we go forward, you're going to see us doing better and better. And by the way, I think people are also going to appreciate when they look at the polls that Bernie Sanders does better against Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton does. In fact, in the last NBC poll, we were 18 points ahead of Donald Trump, far more so than Secretary Clinton. I think that will play a factor in the coming states.
Now, Secretary Clinton won in Ohio and Illinois. That's not the Deep South.
Well, but here's the point. As you well know, she did. And we won in Michigan. But at the end of the day, if you look at Michigan, if you look at Illinois, if you look at Missouri, we come out almost the same in terms of delegates.
Hillary Clinton has got about 2 million more votes than you have. The theory of your campaign and of your presidency has been to create a movement, to create momentum, to gather people. But she seems to be able to gather more people behind her message than you. Isn't that a threat to the theory of the Sanders campaign?
No, John, not at all. I mean, what you're really talking about is she did very well in the Deep South. She creamed us in Mississippi and Alabama and South Carolina. Now, I wish I didn't have to say this, but everything being equal, no Democrat right now, I hope that changes, and I think it will, is going to win those elections, those states in the general election. We have now won 9 states. I think in a couple of weeks, you're going to see us win more states. I think as we head to the West Coast, which is probably the most progressive part of America, the ideas that we are fighting for, dealing with a grotesque level of income and wealth inequality, a national health care system through Medicare for all, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, I think the people in those states really are not going to be voting for establishment politics and establishment economics. They want real change. I think we're going to do well there.
You have, over the last month or so, been drawing greater contrast with Hillary Clinton. Should we continue to see that all the way up through the convention? There have been people who have said, fine, let the race continue, but every sharp attack or distinction that Senator Sanders draws has the potential of unsettling things if Hillary Clinton becomes the nominee.
Well, trust me, there is nothing that I am ever going to say about Secretary Clinton that I've never run a negative ad. And you should see some of the attacks that are coming against us from the Clinton campaign. Nothing that I will say will compare in any way to what the Republicans will say. What an election is about, John, is a contrast in ideas. It is differences of opinion. And yes, Hillary Clinton has moved over the last 10 months much closer to the positions that I've been advocating for 20 or 30 years, but the differences remain. Our history in politics is very different, and I think the people of this country deserve to know that. And I think the central issue is, if you are a Secretary Clinton and you're taking many millions of dollars through your super PAC from Wall Street, from the drug companies, from the fossil fuel industry, are you really going to be the agent of change in taking on the billionaire class, taking on Wall Street, taking on the big money interests, which we need, in my view, right now. And that is an issue that the voters will have to decide.
One last tactical question, Senator. There's been a report that you might go to the convention, and if you're behind in delegates, try to flip those superdelegates to win through using the superdelegates. Is that a strategy you are looking at?
The whole concept of superdelegates is problematic. But I would say that in states where we have won, by 20, 25 points, you know what? I think it might be a good idea for superdelegates to listen to the people in their own state. I just talked to a person the other day who said, you know what? I am going to listen to my state. And if my state votes for you, Bernie, you're going to have my vote. I think that I would hope that a lot of the superdelegates take that factor into consideration.
So, yes, that is a strategy you're pursuing.
Well, to say to a superdelegate, Bernie Sanders won your state by 20 or 30 points, you know, you might want to listen to your state. I think that that is common sense, and I think superdelegates should do that.
But if they didn't come from a state that you won, they shouldn't feel compelled to go for you.
Well, legally, they have their own decision to be made. They have their own right to make that decision. But I would argue that many of these superdelegates, for them, what is most important, as it is for me and Secretary Clinton, by the way, is making sure that no Republican occupies the White House. And if people conclude by the end of this campaign, if we have the energy, and it's an if we win a number of states, that's also an if. But if that's the factor, and it appears that I am the stronger candidate against Trump, I think you're going to see some superdelegates saying, you know what, I like Hillary Clinton, but I want to win this thing. Bernie is our guy.
All right. Senator Sanders, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, John.
And we'll be back in a moment.
Hello, I'm Jerry Mathers. I was the Beaver in Leave It to Beaver. And 20 years ago, I almost died from type 2 diabetes. When I was diagnosed with type 2, I was shocked. My blood sugar was through the roof. Now, the very same natural remedies I use to control my type 2 diabetes are available for you in a super easy program called the Diabetes Solution Kit. And I should know it works. I use the very same techniques to drop 40 pounds of fat, get my blood sugar under control, and watch my type 2 diabetes fade into thin air. If you have diabetes, I urge you to try this step-by-step plan. It has all the natural techniques I used, and it works a lot faster, too. I'm Jerry Mathers, and if I can do it, you can do it, too.
If you'd like to normalize your blood sugar and stop taking your diabetes medication completely with your doctor's approval, go to diabetic44.com. That's diabetic44.com. Reverse your diabetes in as little as 30 days by going to diabetic44.com. That's diabetic44.com now.
We're back with former Republican presidential candidate and South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who is now supporting Senator Cruz.
With no delegates, by the way.
We didn't want to rub that in, Senator. You once said that choosing between Trump and Cruz is like the difference between being shot or poisoned. So how is your health?
Well, you know, you can maybe they'll find an antidote to poisoning. It's hard to, once you're shot, to get over it. The bottom line is that I believe Donald Trump would be an absolute utter disaster for the Republican Party, destroy conservatism as we know it. We would get wiped out, and it would take generations to overcome a Trump candidacy. Ronald Reagan had a three-legged stool of conservatism: fiscal, social, and strong national security. Donald has a four-legged stool because he's the Donald. It's got to be bigger. Economic populism, xenophobia, race baiting, and religious bigotry are the stool that he has formed. That is his campaign. That is not conservatism. Ted Cruz, in my view, is a real Republican who I often disagree with. I'm supporting Ted because I think he's the best alternative to Donald Trump. John Kasich is the most electable Republican. I don't think he has a chance to win at the convention because it's an outsider year. And John Kasich is an insider, and most of the delegates are looking for an outsider. I love John Kasich, but if he stays in this race, or they don't coordinate the efforts between Cruz and Kasich, we're going to wind up giving the nomination to Trump.
You say it's an outsider year, and your description of Trump's campaign, it's a very popular campaign. People are turning up to those rallies. He's getting the votes.
Yeah, 35 to 40% is probably where he's going to be. A lot of people believe that illegal immigration is a real problem. He's playing on their fears. He says most of them are rapists and drug dealers. They're not. Here's why we're losing the Hispanic vote. Nobody's going to listen to you about your economic plan or your ability to defend the nation if you're going to deport their grandmother. I'm in the party of family values, and I like that. There are 11 million illegal immigrants. 60% have been here a decade. Many of them have American children, American citizen children and grandchildren. What do you think is going to happen to my Republican friends if our position is that we're going to take the grandmother of a American citizen member of the military who is illegal? How do we get that person to vote for us if we're going to deport their grandmother when all she's done is violate the immigration laws? This is why we're getting killed with Hispanics, and Mr. Trump has taken every problem we've had with Hispanics and poured gasoline on it.
What do you think? What's the gap between the Republicans who share your view, or some of them, and would like to stop Donald Trump?
Right.
And say that privately. What's the gap between what they say privately and what they're willing to do publicly?
We're a divided party. We've got a lot of angry people in our base who've been told things by Senator Cruz and others that we could do more than we actually could do. The country's in a mess. I can understand being frustrated with illegal immigration, but you're not going to fix it by having a position like Mr. Trump that has no chance of getting through the Senate.
But what I'm asking is, how many people do you have behind you to really stop Donald Trump? Because right now, he's rolling on past all these efforts.
65% of the Republican Party would like to vote for somebody other than Donald Trump. We're about to nominate the one person that not only would lose in 2016, but would destroy the party for decades to come. I'd rather lose without Trump than try to win with him. And if he wants to leave the party, leave.
So you won't vote for him if he's the nominee?
Ask me after the convention that question. But I'm making it pretty clear to you that I think Mr. Trump destroys the party that I love. And as much as I disagree with Ted Cruz, I think he's a real Republican. He'd nominate conservative judges. He will not sell Israel out. He's a reliable Republican conservative. Mr. Trump is an interloper and a demagogue of the greatest proportion.
You signed a pledge, though, so you would be willing to break that pledge after.
Well, I'm out of the race now. And
yeah.
Here's what I want Republicans to do. We can lose an election, but I don't want us to lose our heart and soul. If we nominate Donald Trump and he carries the banner of the Republican Party, given who he is and what he said about immigrants, about Muslims, and young women, we will not just lose the election. We've lost the heart and soul of the conservative movement. That's what's at stake. And I hope John Kasich is listening. John, if I thought you could win, I'd be behind you because you are the most electable candidate. Work with Ted to deny Trump 1237 or 1239, whatever the number is. And if you're not willing to work with Ted, then you're hurting the cause. By Kasich going to Utah, you're making it harder for Ted to get 50%.
You've got to speak later today about the future of the Middle East. Which is more complicated, the future of the Middle East or the Republican Party?
There's a pathway forward in the Mideast. I don't see one right now for the Republican Party. In all seriousness, there are a lot of issues the country will be dealing with in the future. How do you bring a broken and divided country together? Is Mr. Trump the answer to the problems in the Mideast? His foreign policy is gibberish. The Mideast is a mess. The Republican Party is at a tipping point here. We're going to go down one of two roads, the Trump road, which is the destruction of conservatism. We're going to reevaluate and go down a road a little more optimistic, and I think Ted Cruz and John Kasich represent that path. But the Mideast politics, to me, seem to be less of a mess right now than the Republican Party, and that's saying a hell of a lot.
All right, Senator, we're going to have to end it there.
You.
We're running out of time. Thanks so much for being here. It could be months before either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump officially clinches their party's nomination, but voters across America are already thinking about the prospect of a contest between the two of them in the fall. Last week, CBS News contributor and Republican strategist Frank Luntz talked to a group of Florida voters who were more likely to support none of the above than either Clinton or Trump.
So let's set the tone for everybody at home. How many of you have a positive impression of Donald Trump? Raise your hands. None of you. How many of you have a positive impression of Hillary Clinton? Raise your hands. None of you. So you must not be pretty happy about this election so far. What's going on? Explain it.
I think we're just losing sight, or the candidates are losing sight about what's really important to the American people. They're thinking more about each other instead of us.
I think the office is more important than these people that are running, and they're losing track of what they're trying to achieve.
I'm most troubled by the fact that so many people support Hillary and Trump. It's shocking to me. I mean, the number of people that I know in my life, they don't like him, and they don't like Hillary, and they're so emotionally driven, they act like kids a lot of times when they're talking.
Yeah, I think that Donald Trump is treating this like a reality show and kind of like a midlife crisis. He's already got the car. He's already got the plane. Now he wants to buy the presidency, buy the country. And Hillary Clinton, You know, that's all she's got is government service life, and she's been banking on and making money off of it this entire time.
We'll hear more from these Florida voters and Frank Luntz in our next half hour.
To run a successful business, you need to make the most of your time and money. Good news, LegalZoom can help you save both during National Small Business Month. LegalZoom is the smart way to start your business. Right now, when you incorporate or form an LLC, you can also save money on some of the basics to get up and running, like a 3-month trial of QuickBooks online accounting software and a domain name for a year through web.com, both at no charge. After your business is set up, LegalZoom can help with a lot more. Reviewing contracts and dealing with day-to-day legal hurdles takes time away from your growing business. That's what LegalZoom's business legal plan is for. You get legal advice for your business from independent attorneys licensed in 48 states. You also get access to NDAs, lease agreements, and more. Best part is you won't get charged by the hour since LegalZoom is not a law firm. Instead, you pay a low monthly fee. Save time and money starting and running your business during National Small Business Month at LegalZoom.com today. Don't forget to enter Gordon in the referral box at checkout. LegalZoom.com.
Welcome back to Face the Nation. I'm John Dickerson. CBS News contributor and Republican strategist Frank Luntz spoke with a group of Florida Republicans and Democratic voters who opposed both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Let's listen to some of their conversation.
You don't trust Hillary Clinton?
Not at all.
You don't trust Donald Trump?
No.
Not as much.
How could you be more qualified than Hillary Clinton?
I mean, Hillary Clinton hasn't done anything that has made her qualified. The only
United States Senator, Secretary of State.
I'm sorry to say
First
she's
lady.
A flip-flopper. That's just what it is. I see character because people's stance on issues can change, as we have all seen. Character defines who you are, not what you do.
And titles aren't accomplishments.
So I'm going to play for viewers at home that clip that you reacted to, and then I want to understand why you resented it so much.
You talk about leveling with the American people. Have you always told the truth?
I've always tried to. Always. Always.
Some people are going to call that wiggle room that you just gave yourself.
Well, no,
always tried to.
No,
I mean, Jimmy Carter said, I will never lie to you.
Well, but that's, but you know, you're asking me to say, have I ever? I don't believe I ever have.
What was wrong?
She just, you could turn off the sound and still see on her face that she was lying. She was the worst liar I think I've ever seen in my life.
She lied about lying.
Right.
I mean, how worse can you get?
For me, it comes down to literally a bottom line decision. To what length am I willing to go to keep Trump out of the White House?
Yeah.
Do I have to pick the lesser of two evils for someone to run the free world? This is supposed to be the greatest country on earth, and right now we're being forced to pick the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. All these people keep saying that there's two Donald Trumps. Well, first off, I'd like a president with one personality. But if that other personality is better, can we see that, please?
Yeah. He already said he's a chameleon and that he'll be totally different when he takes office. Mm-hmm. So even if he changed, would we even know if that's the real Donald Trump?
I'm 46. I've voted in every single election, always for a Republican, and I will not vote if it's Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How can you not?
Because I'm not bound to my party. I am bound to my country and to my God and to
Amen.
Myself.
Amen.
Country's more important.
Because neither candidate is acceptable. And there are going to be a lot of Republicans like me who are going to hope for a broker convention, that somebody's going to emerge from the convention and have an acceptable conservative, real Republican as our nominee.
There is great opportunity, is what we're demonstrating. There is a great opportunity for someone, and that person had better come forward fast, because if the Republicans put Donald Trump up and if the Democrats put Hillary Clinton, it will be the worst turnout election ever.
I have been voting straight Republican for over 30 years, and at this point in time, I need to be able to look my grandson in the eye and tell him that I voted with principle.
Mm-hmm.
I supported a candidate of principle, and right Amen. Now we don't have one.
And Frank Luntz is with us now. Frank, this was a bipartisan group. How hard was it to find the none of the above voters?
Instantaneous. We recruited that in less than 24 hours. There are so many of them. If you asked me, I'd say about 15% of the electorate right now is none of the above. It's never been this high this early in the campaign.
What about the Democrats versus the Republicans? I mean, there is some people say a false equivalence by saying, yes, people are unhappy in the Democratic Party with Hillary Clinton, perhaps, but there is absolute terror in the Republican Party.
The difference is that it's trust, it's integrity with Hillary Clinton, and with Trump, it's unpredictability. And both of them are poisonous. And you can see it in the electorate right now. The fact is that with each week, the demonstrations get worse. The rejection of the other side gets worse. The unwillingness to listen and try to decide who's telling the truth and who's best to lead us, it becomes more and more difficult. I've never seen so many Republicans rejecting the likely nominee. I've never seen so many Democrats saying that I will not vote for her. This is significant.
You know, I remember in 08, there were a lot of Clinton supporters who said, we're never going to vote for Barack Obama. In Indiana, one exit poll had that number close to 50%. So give me a sense of how these voters, can they be changed? Is there anything Trump or Clinton could do to change their minds?
It is so much easier to take someone who's got a positive image and make it negative than it is to take someone with a negative image and make it positive. In Donald Trump's case, his language, his tone, his demeanor has brought so many people into the Republican Party that don't consider themselves Republican, but they're voting for him because they believe that he appreciates their anger. But he's losing a greater number of people in the general election. And in fact, these protests work for him in the primary. They make him more likely to win because Republicans are gathering around him to protect him from the attacks on the left. But in the general election, undecided, independent, moderate voters don't like this at all. And in Hillary Clinton's case, she's got to be careful because these Bernie Sanders voters are so devoted to him and so committed to him, not because of policy, but also because of persona, that they think he's honest and direct and sincere. This campaign is not going to be about policy between now and November. It's going to be about who they are.
So in the Republican side, just quickly, so Senator Cruz versus Hillary Clinton does better in a general election than Donald Trump?
Oh, boy. I think Cruz does better because it's not just about who they are. It's also about how they think and their plans for the future. On economic policy, he'd have the advantage. On social issues, she'd have the advantage. And on foreign policy, it's a wash. With Donald Trump, I don't know what he's going to say. You don't know what he's going to say. I don't think Donald Trump knows what he's going to say.
Yeah. All right, Frank Luntz, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Now with our politics panel, Susan Page is Washington Bureau Chief at USA Today. Rehan Salam is the Executive Editor of the National Review. Ruth Marcus is a columnist at the Washington Post. And Jonathan Martin is National Political Correspondent for the New York Times. Susan, I want to start with you. Where is the Republican race now as you see it?
You know, John Kasich told you in your interview that there had been 10 contested conventions and that only three of them went with the front runner. But there's been one contested convention since we went to the modern primary system, and it went with the front runner going into the convention. That was Gerald Ford in 1976. Like it or not, Donald Trump is likely to be the Republican nominee for president, and that can be a really messy convention or can be a relatively smooth convention. But the fact is, he is by far the most likely nominee going at this moment.
But we're not going to know until California, probably, which is the last day of voting, June 7th, when California and New Jersey, two large states, will cast their ballots. And California is district by district, which means that with the possibility of the GOP race, John, coming down to a Ted Cruz, John Kasich, Donald Trump battle, the heartland of Santa Monica, Marin County, real red America,
yeah,
could decide who the next GOP nominee is.
Right. Rehan, what if you are... if you are not certain about Donald Trump or you're actively trying to work against him, where does the smart activity go? Do you get behind Kasich? Do you ask Kasich to drop out? What's your...
Look, Kasich has a lot of decent qualities. He is someone who would fare well in a general election. He's from the Midwest. He's from a big swing state. It's also true that it is impossible for him to win. And the idea that he is going to be the one coming out of a brokered convention is just, it just defies comprehension. You know, it speaks to a level of self-delusion that, I mean, if there have been a lot of delusional candidates in this race, Ted Cruz is very flawed, but what is also true is that he has a very strong, consistent position on immigration. One can imagine some of the voters that Donald Trump has energized going behind, going along with Ted Cruz. It is very hard to imagine many other Republicans pulling that off. And the other difficulty is that conservatives have to move on a parallel track, which is thinking hard about a minor party race as well. And doing both of those things at once, yeah, trying to deny Trump the nomination while also trying to organize outside of the party, if necessary, to give conservatives a place to vote, is going to be really challenging.
So you mean a third party,
yes,
creation. Ruth, Donald Trump is meeting with some Washington Republicans this week. He's talking about phone calls with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and unity. What about those Republicans who are getting to yes with Donald Trump?
Well, there are some Republicans getting to yes with Donald Trump, but there are a lot of Republicans getting to OMG with Donald Trump. And I think we need to sort of pause and appreciate the pigs flying moment that we're in right now. To have Lindsey Graham endorsing Ted Cruz.
Because of all the things he said that have not been complimentary.
To have the Republican establishment, which Ted Cruz has spent his entire time in Washington and before kicking in the teeth, now trying to coalesce around Ted Cruz is pretty remarkable. The Trump outreach to the establishment is interesting, but what we see with Trump is there's kind of one part outreach and then two steps of, oh, there'll be riots and, you know, just behavior and comments that are just not acceptable to the Republican establishment. One really quick thing. I find the third party piece, and I know you guys wrote about it, very far-fetched. The ballot access rules make it very difficult to mount a serious third-party challenge.
Add one fast point there. It is very difficult to get somebody on the ballot to run as an independent, which is why what they're looking at doing is basically piggybacking on one of the minor parties, Libertarians, Constitution, that already have ballot access. And doing that, it makes it a little bit easier. It's still certainly a long ball, perhaps even a Hail Mary, but if you do it with a party that already exists, it's a little bit easier.
Would the parties that already exist allow themselves to be the host of a rump Republican party?
That's the other challenge, too, is you have to convince them that that's what you're doing. But this is
what end? What's the goal?
To stop Trump from winning the presidency.
And then what happens?
Well, you deny him the presidency.
About a fifth to a quarter of Republicans who will not vote for Donald Trump, who are simply not going to turn out for him. When you think about down ballot races, when you think about the party apparatus going forward, it is not obvious that this third party bid would not actually be a vessel for the party that's to come. Because another thing, you know, that Frank pointed out earlier is that if you look at young people, 18 to 29 voters, they choose Bernie Sanders by a wide margin over the Republican field. The Republican Party needs to think around the bend. Donald Trump is he's energized a lot of voters who are frankly not going to be the voters of the future.
You know, this discussion, though, underscores why the Stop Trump movement has gone nowhere. There's not a candidate that's acceptable. There's not a strategy that works. The Republicans I've talked to off the record, Republican officials here in town, think they're going to lose in November. And the strategy, is there a way to lose the presidency but hold the Senate? Is there a way to lose the White House and the Senate but not have the party destroyed? And that is the discussion going on. And they are not of one mind of whether Ted Cruz or Donald Trump is the smarter bet if what you're thinking about is post-2016.
This
is,
well, you know, I asked Senator Graham this question, the gap between what they say privately and what they're willing to do public, and the gap is vast.
Yes, but there is a way to stop Donald Trump. The problem is that they are divided between two candidates trying to stop him, and it's a very familiar divide. It's the pre-Trump divide. It's almost quaint now, establishment and conservative, and they can't figure out who should stop him, and it's hard for these folks in the party to get behind Ted Cruz. Mitt Romney and Lindsey Graham are trying to make it easier, but it's still very difficult.
Neither one of them would say the word endorse when they talked about Ted Cruz.
The state of the GOP in March of 2016 is, we have to lose with Cruz. It's important. I mean, that's astonishing, right? That they are trying to save their party by nominating somebody that they assume will lose the presidency.
Yeah, and at the same time, I think that the notion, I kind of disagree with Frank, that Donald Trump would be a less strong candidate against Hillary Clinton than Ted Cruz. I think that the Clinton campaign is quite nervous about the prospect of running against Donald
Trump.
Because why? Because who knows? Because the Rust Belt, because all those downscale white guys, who knows what, you know, with Ted Cruz, sort of where he's going and what he's going to say. You don't know that with Donald Trump, and you don't know what voters he can energize.
I was shocked to see Lindsey Graham, by the way, willing to die on the hill of Gang of Eight-style comprehensive immigration reform. I mean, so, you know, to his credit, he is willing to get behind someone like Ted Cruz. But it is incredible to see that a position that is rejected by a large majority of Republicans, he is still willing to die on that hill. And again, it's not just about illegal immigration. It's also larger concerns about what is the right immigration strategy for the future of this country. And that is something that, you know, if the whole effort to stop Trump becomes associated with what you might call Grahamism or Ryanism, that's going to be a problem, and that's an opportunity for Ted Cruz.
Well, that's right. You're pointing out the contradiction here between here you have somebody who believes in comprehensive immigration reform, which Ted Cruz adamantly does not, nevertheless being a person who's saying Ted Cruz should be the nominee.
Yeah, and it's a mixed message.
Pigs are still in the air here.
More to come.
Susan, yeah, right.
There's launching right now.
Susan, let me ask you this question. Donald Trump said there would be riots if the nomination were taken from him, and that was seen as a kind of incendiary thing. But isn't he right?
Both things are right. It's an incendiary thing to say, not something we've heard our political leaders say before. And he is right. I mean, if Donald Trump goes to the convention just shy of 1237, but having won the most states, having won by far the most delegates, by getting the most votes, do you think that they're going to go away quietly saying, oh, well, okay, a Cruz Kasich ticket, that makes a lot of sense for the GOP? No, there's going to be trouble. And I think one of the most disheartening things that we've seen is the continuing and escalating violence at Trump rallies by protesters and by the Trump forces against the protesters. And I think Donald Trump should think twice about continuing to fuel that particular fire.
Ruth, let me, switching to the Democrats, ask you this question. If people blocked the road to an Obama event in 2008, what would the Democratic reaction have been to that, the way they blocked the road to the Trump event?
I think you know the answer to your question, and I'm not. And I'd like to say that
people
would outraged. Democrats would have been outraged at the notion of people blocking access to Obama events. And I think that actually there is a role for protests, but there also needs to be space. And we've talked about it before with respect to the Black Lives Matter movement and stopping Sanders from speaking. There has to be space for Trump to relay his message, as odious as it is, and there is appropriate space and time for protesters to disagree with that message without squelching it entirely.
Jonathan, what's the role for Bernie Sanders going forward now on the Democratic side?
Getting a lot of media attention, pushing his message, winning delegates where he can, and trying to basically go into the convention with the ability to leverage the party towards a more populist orientation and sort of keeping the pressure on her ideologically more than he is in an actual threat to win the race. Susan, the math is very difficult.
I was struck when Senator Sanders said, well, she may have gotten 2 million more votes, but they're mostly in the South. Isn't the argument of his campaign that he has such a message that will break through and that that's why he would do well as a president? Because even in precincts that
revolution.
Haven't
revolution turns
yeah.
out to be hard.
But more successful than any of us would have predicted months ago, to be clear. I think you're right. The math is hard. It's hard to see how he gets the nomination. But you know what? Hillary Clinton needs Bernie Sanders on her side. Once he finally gets out of the race after the convention, she needs Bernie Sanders to make her case with energizing, especially younger voters,
right.
because he continues to crush her in that demographic. And she needs him not only to support her, but to care enough about her candidacy to come out and vote in November.
And watch for Bernie Sanders in the next bit to sharpen his message against Donald Trump and not as much against Hillary Clinton, because he's kind of looking down the road as well.
Last question to you, Rayhan. How much can the Democrats use what's happening in the Republican race right now in the general election against whoever the nominee is?
Oh, they can absolutely use it, particularly Hillary Clinton, to great effect. The trouble is that when you have tremendous success, when you have a kind of catastrophic success like Hillary Clinton might have in a race against Donald Trump, then the Democratic coalition becomes so big, so broad, so expansive that you start having more civil wars within that mm-hmm. coalition. And the Bernie Sanders challenge represents the future. This party that now seems unified against Trump is going to have a lot of fractiousness as it has in previous eras, and that's going to become something that's going to be very, very interesting to watch.
You kind of prefer to be the Democrats right now.
Oh, sure.
But it's not an unsettled
seat
at the moment. All right, we're going to have to end it there. We'll be back in a moment with a look at the fight over President Obama's Supreme Court nominee. We're back with CBS News chief legal correspondent Jan Crawford and attorney Miguel Estrada, who knows what it's like to be at the center of a congressional fight over a president's judicial nomination. His nomination to the D.C. Court of Appeals was blocked by the Senate Democrats in 2002. Jan, I'm going to start with you, though. What kind of a jurist is Merrick Garland? And has his we know the Senate Republicans were going to block whoever the president nominated. Has it changed now that he's actually nominated someone?
Not in the short term. It hasn't changed. The calculus, they were going to block whoever the president, as Senator McConnell said early on, would come up. That said, I think this pick puts Senate Republicans in perhaps the smallest possible corner, because he really is the best pick that a Republican Senate could hope for from a Democratic president. I mean, as a justice, I think we have to assume that he will be much like he is as a judge. And on that D.C.-based federal appeals court, now in his 19th year, he's been pretty restrained, cautious, not someone who's going to swing for the fences and try to remake the law as a justice, but nonetheless a solid liberal vote. And that's why Republicans are dug in for now, because his nomination still would change the balance of the court. By replacing Justice Scalia, that Supreme Court would be 5-4 liberal, potentially, you know, for a generation.
Miguel, what do you make of the Republican strategy to just block?
Well, look, let me get started with my view, which is to say when the president puts somebody who is a qualified person, the Senate should give him a hearing and get him through. And I think Judge Garland is astronomically qualified and should be confirmed. The strategy is a political strategy.
Yes.
And it made enormous sense for Leader McConnell to do before the announcement because it forced the White House to come to the table and put on the table the best qualified person that is the most attractive to the Republican Party. If the party were 20 points ahead in the polls and we were united behind a Republican nominee who was clearly conservative, this strategy might continue to make sense. Everybody knows that that's not the case. And when we come to the primaries in June, and it's clear that at best we're going to have a messy contested convention, I think there will be a number of Republican senators who will take a second look at this and say, you know, it's a high-quality person. We should give him a hearing and confirm him.
I mean, I think you can't assume that say, President Clinton, if she's going into the Oval Office, would even renominate Merrick Garland. He's a 63-year-old white guy, you know, not the kind of home run that these liberal groups had hoped for. And so the argument to Miguel's point is that Republicans could well realize that they're going to get a liberal flamethrower come January, and they better confirm this now. I think that's why the calculus could very well change in the months ahead.
Miguel, is there any, you mentioned the distinction, a crucial one between law and politics. Is there any legal or constitutional basis, though, in saying the president can't nominate somebody, or if they nominate him, we're not going to listen to him?
Well, I think the latter. I mean, you know, the latter is clearly okay under the Constitution. All Article 2 says is that the president may nominate and needs the affirmative consent of the Senate to appoint. And if the Senate fails to do anything whatsoever, that is not the consent that the Constitution contemplates, and therefore the person cannot be appointed. There is nothing in the Constitution that says that the Senate has to have hearings or a vote. And if there were, then the filibuster, which we have had for years and years, would have been unconstitutional.
And now, this man would have been a federal appeals court judge right now because Democrats filibustered his nomination to the D.C.-based federal appeals court. And President Obama, if you remember, for Justice Alito, voted to block. It's the Senate gets to advise and consent.
Where do you think this puts us, Jan, in the politicization of Supreme Court picks? Is this in keeping with or a big break from?
No, I mean, I think that this has long been politicized. I mean, the Judiciary Committee is like the Hatfields and the McCoys. I mean, you look back for the last 30, 40 years, and this has been a bitter battle. These are the most senior members of the United States Senate, and they are dug in. I mean, this is a separate point, but I think you have to give Republicans in some ways a lot of credit for being honest about what they're doing. Instead of putting the nominee through the charade of a hearing and trying to dig up personal attacks, to vote them down, they're saying, no, you know, this is not about Merrick Garland. This is about the process. Say, for example, when Miguel Estrada was nominated by President Bush, they went through this kind of charade, Democrats did, of personal attacks. Instead of saying, we're not going to confirm President Bush's nominees. We don't want them to be on the Supreme Court someday. So at least in this sense, Republicans are being honest.
We have about 20 seconds. The notion, go ahead, did you want to
add? All of that is ancient history. I mean, it seems to me that as a people, we need to focus on where we go to now. And when we have a bid from the president, who is probably the best qualified person that a president of any party could have picked, the party who rules the Senate ought to take it seriously. And as a political calculation, give this a fair hearing.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you so much for both of you. That's it for us today. Thanks for watching. Until next week, for Face the Nation, I'm John Dickerson. Today's guests were Bernie Sanders, John Kasich, and Lindsey Graham. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. The senior producer is Jill Jackson. This broadcast was directed by Brian Nailsnick. Face the Nation originates from CBS News in Washington. For more Face the Nation, we're online at facethenation.com, and you can follow Face the Nation, John Dickerson, and CBS Radio News on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Face the Nation is also rebroadcast on our digital network, CBSN, at 2 and 6 p.m. Eastern, every Sunday.